staff of the committee, representatives from the department, interested and everyone present from the guest of parliament. It's quite a long time we have met. I know that we are meeting at a time when we are still not yet open in terms of the normal programs of parliament. But from time to time, there will always be situations that demand that we meet. And I must say, the main purpose of today's meeting is to do exactly that, that as we meet in the normal program of parliament, we must know and be ready for the program ahead. I must say though, I'm not in a good spirit. I'm absolutely off the mark. I'm still in a state of non-acceptance that one of the most humble, outstanding discipline, but also a very good interpersonal relations character, a young life that we lost a day before yesterday night. We woke up in the sad news that a former member of this committee, whom I can say without share of a doubt, that was young as he was marveled by everyone in the committee. Honorable Nxumalo, Mthokozo Nxumalo, we woke up on those sad news that is no longer with us. I must say that from time to time, we meet each other, we make different marks, we leave different impressions, and we touch the different types of characters and lives. And I can say without any shadow of the doubt, that is one of the best souls one has ever interacted with, regardless of political backgrounds. He knew what to do, at what point, and what was required and needed in the execution of duty. Without any further ado, I think before doing anything for what we came here for, I would ask, I'm trying to check, I didn't discuss this with anyone. I discussed it with myself, and there was consensus in that meeting that it might be a necessary thing to do. I will ask maybe just for 2 minutes, for each of the parties that are in this committee to say one or two things on the untimely departure of Honorable Mthokozisi Nxumalo. 2 minutes except for Honorable Professor Simang. I've not seen whether he's in the group. He is present today in the meeting. Maybe that's where I should have started from. Do we have any apologies?
Yes, Chair. Good morning, honorable members and our guests. I've got only one apology from Mr. Zunguna. He's attending an oversight with PC on small business in KZN and Gauteng. Thank you, Chair.
Okay. You will bear with me, honorable members. I'm still trying to also fix my gadget. I'm just using my smartphone for now.
Sorry, Chair. The broadcasting unit is asking when the members speak, can they please switch on their video because the meeting is live.
Okay. They are part of, they are in the meeting. They heard that. I saw that one apology was from Honorable Malinga. Nothing, traveling is allowed. If you don't have network at home, you must do like the president of Malawi did. Just move to the place where the event should have been or was supposed to be taking place. So you can just move to Cape Town, like the president of Malawi who moved to London so that he can be guaranteed network. So I'm sure we can guarantee you network in Cape Town or Johannesburg. Or if you like, you can come to KZN, Durban and Umgungundlovu. But having said so, honorable members, I will give, if Honorable Zungula is not here, I will give 2 minutes to each of the parties, one person from that party, members. I can't choose if there are two who are present in the meeting. They will decide amongst themselves who would do the two-minute comment or message on the untimely departure of Honorable Nxumalo. I'm doing this, honorable members, because in our first setup as a committee, Honorable Nxumalo was part of this committee for quite a long time until, if I'm not mistaken, at the beginning of this year. So that is why we do so. I know also that during the course of the recess, we lost some members, and recently we have lost Honorable Jaisa. But I think it will be befitting for these members so that whatever we do, there is a collective acceptance that we share the same grief as a committee. I will start with, they will decide. I will start with Honorable Mylem or Honorable Lodrima. And then either of them, they will decide amongst themselves. And then I will go to the Honorable Matogwe or Honorable Lala. They will choose or decide who is with them. Please remind me if there is a member that I would be leaving out. And then I will go to Honorable, I was going to go to Honorable Zungula. Now I'm told he's made an apology. Which other party am I believing? And then I will go to the ANC, Idamene. There are five of them. They will decide who's going to do it on their behalf. And then I will. The last person will be Honorable Professor Msimang, whom I will be giving 3 minutes because he's a member of his party that we're talking about. And then we will then go straight to the business of the day. I don't know who else am I leaving if Honorable Zungula is not here. Is there someone, Ari and Ayanda, I'm leaving?
No, Chair. You covered all of them.
Okay. Can we do it like this? I don't like to call members according to their parties, but can I go to the... Honorable members from the DA, who they will decide who's doing it on their behalf.
Mr. Chair, I'll be doing it on behalf of the DA. It's interesting to see. Can I go? Thanks.
Yes, go ahead, Honorable.
It's always interesting to see the impact that somebody has on other people. And although we've lost many of our colleagues over the last several months, the impact of somebody's death on your own colleagues shows in what sort of esteem they were held by their colleagues. And so was the case with Honorable Nomalo. Immediately, the WhatsApp groups of my own party lit up with shock and sorrow at news of his death at such a young age. And everybody seemed struck by the loss of so much potential from somebody who would have made a mark on South Africa's political scene. So this is a very sad incident, and certainly on behalf of the DA, I'd like to pass on our commiserations to not only the family, but also the colleagues of Honorable Nomalo. Thanks, Mr. Chair.
Okay. BFF, can you decide again who's doing it?
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I hope I'm audible. And I'll also request to keep my video off for network purposes. This is a hard one, especially for myself. As Honorable Nomalo was not just a colleague, he was a very close friend to me as well. So I hardly ran out of words, but on this one, I'm still just in shock. For the past 24 hours, one has been really in shock of what is happening in this world. So as the economic freedom fighters, we are saddened by the passing of Honorable Nomalo. What a soul, what a bubbly soul, with conviction to his work as the IFP. Even if we were socialists, but he would always be pro policies of his organization. And I saw the bright future in him in politics, and the contribution he had made as well. I would know because we are also from the same province. I know the impact he had made in the youth as the president of their youth brigade. So it is quite a loss, and we are very saddened, and we are saying condolences to the family and also to his party, and also to the nation that lost such a beautiful and committed soul to his work. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Langa. The ANC.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Greetings to you. Greetings to the colleagues. And greetings to the viewers at home. The ANC is very saddened by the passing of Honorable Nomalo, a very young, energetic comrade, very gigantic, both in his voice and his intellect. We often made jokes in the chamber calling him our Barry White because of the manner in which his voice amplifies. We all have shared moments with Honorable Nomalo, in our different capacities as friends, as colleagues. And I must say that he is one of the brothers that from another party was added to my list of friends. And as the African National Congress, we want to say to the Inkatha Freedom Party, his family, his fiance, his children, our condolences. I must reflect on one moment that I had with Honorable Nxumalo, and it was months after he read a wrong speech, and we were making a joke out of it, and he said, "My brother, if that moment did not destroy me forever, nothing will ever do in life." And this is emphatic to some wise words that what determines us is not how hard we fall, but how well we rise after falling. Honorable Nxumalo rose to the occasion to an extent where his party felt it necessary to bestow the responsibility of a deputy chief whip at his age. I must say, when Honorable Nxumalo was born, I was doing sub A. I'm not a deputy chief whip in my party. It amplifies the how he rose after falling, if we call it a fall. In the African National Congress, normally when we are confronted with dark clouds, we tend to turn to the good book, which is the Bible. And allow me to do that, Chair, in honor of our beloved Honorable Nxumalo. When we say, "Come to me, all who you are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and humble in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy and my burden is light." That will be Matthew 11:25-30. On behalf of the African National Congress again, we would want to say condolences to the family, the Inkatha Freedom Party, the fiance, the children of Honorable Nxumalo. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, honorable members, for your statements. And I'm sure when we say, when I say from a chair's point of view that on behalf of this committee, we extend our words of condolences to the family of Honorable Nxumalo, to his party, the Inkatha Freedom Party, to his family and children, in particular his fiance, as well as we say, may this departed soul of this young life rest in eternal peace. It is a fact that it's still like a dream that will never come true. Those are just some of the dreams you wish they will never come true, but it's a reality that is no more with us now. With those words, I'm sure they will comfort the family. They will give strength to his party, but also they will give unity and the task and reason of purpose for all of us who have taken the commitment to serve this nation. That as he rests in peace, is resting in peace, he still leaves a huge responsibility on us to continue to pursue the interest of South Africans as a whole. Without any further ado, As we go to the purpose of today's meeting, I just want to make few comments, and then we go to the real purpose of why we're here today. First, let me start by saying that it has been quite a tough period, and a lot of developments have taken place since we last had our convergence as a committee. And as we continue to perform and come back to reality, we are now faced with more tasks that will require our serious attention as a committee of parliament. We know we have been seized with the crisis, I must say, because I think it may be going beyond the crisis now into a national disaster, the crisis of fuel pricing. And we know that by tonight, we are seeing another increase. And this is a matter that is still sitting in front of this committee to say what alternatives and what are the options that we think have to be done. But it seems time is not on our side in trying to ensure that a solution is found to mitigate against this. We all know what will be the crisis as far as the value chain is concerned in relation to the movements of goods, in terms of transportation, in relation to cost on the challenges of food security as part of the value chain. The matter, the issues are very many that will be impacted by this. So I'm just saying this is one of the tasks that is being placed now as a matter of extreme urgency in front of us. As a public representative, we have made this commitment to ensure that we mitigate against such challenges that are bringing a burden in front of the South African citizen. The second point that I think it would be critical also to take to mention is that subsequent to the discussion we have had, including the question of fuel security and sustainability, but also challenges with regards to distribution, we have seen the waves of the incidents that have taken place early July, which led to almost a standstill of the economy in two provinces, particularly KZN as well as Gauteng. And that indirectly would have had an impact on quite a number of issues that we might need, as a matter of extreme agents, take into consideration. So I'm placing these issues, honorable members, as matters that we may have to grapple with them even before we start with the process, or when we start with the process, we may have a huge challenge of prioritization, which could mean we might have to ask for extra time instead of the normal time that we are always operating on. Secondly, the third point, which is based on the issue that I just raised now, or we just done, is that we will try our level best, and I think if honorable members can indicate, we will try our level best. We know that honorable Nxumalo was not part of this committee, but was still trying to interact with other committees, especially those who he was serving on, to look at a visit that can be undertaken to his home. He hails from Nongoma, and that is where also
he met his demise in Nongoma. I'm not sure yet about the actual place in Nongoma, but it's from Nongoma. There is a possibility that the date of the visit could be Thursday. We will appreciate if parties, we can't go all of us as a committee. I think I was trying to engage with other colleagues in some of the committees, was that we may identify 5 members per committee, especially on our side, because we are not the main committee was serving on. So we might be needed that by the end of this committee, we know which members could be available either on Thursday if we finalize that date, but it will mean members must be ready on the date. It may not be Thursday, but we must know which members are willing or are anticipating their availability to attend. We are not yet sure of the date of the funeral, but we all know that we are being discouraged because of the current conditions that we see as far as the COVID-19 pandemic is concerned. So that is why this is the visit that is more encouraged than the funeral, because the funeral is only limited or kept at 50. And therefore, we know that we're talking about, I think members were correct when they say, we're talking about someone who has touched almost everyone that he has interacted with in Parliament. I'm saying Parliament, not just in the National Assembly, in Parliament, which to me means, as you all know, it means the National Assembly as well as the NCOP. We're talking about someone who was quite senior in his party, about someone who would have made a lot of contribution to the people around his district and also in his municipality, let alone the area or village where he comes from. So we will urge members, be open and indicate in advance your availability, but we intend to take at least one person, if that is the case, per party, excluding the chairperson, obviously. One person per party and then with the chairperson. We will do the same if the numbers are not the numbers that are required. We would have loved if Honorable Professor Msimang was here, but we will interact with him whether he's supposed to be considered as part of that delegation or there are some other arrangement that is considered. Having said so, Honorable Members, I'm sorry, I know that the Parliamentary Legal Services, are they present today? Because we're here, I see...
yes, the President.
Mr. Jenkins. Am I correct? He's from Legal Services.
Yes, Legal is here, Chair.
I know. Long time no see.
Yes, Mr. Andile will lead the presentation. Thank you very much, Chairperson. I hope you're well. Mr. Andile Tatiano, I think you know him already. Thank you.
Oh, let me. That's why I was checking on my list. Yeah, let me see. I can't say, Bra Ace.
You can say so, Chairperson.
Okay. Why don't say your name? Oh, now I see. Oh, now you are put as a host. Okay, now I see. Sorry. Okay. Thank you for being here. Honorable members, the reason you are here today, you will recall we had discussions quite extensive. The first part was the issue with regards to the tablings to parliaments that were required as far as the Section 2 entities, that is SAF, as well as which is the Central Energy Fund, as well as the Nexa. We received a letter from the department in the hand of the Director General stating that by legislation and by law, the entities are not expected to table their annual financial statements to the committees. They are required to table to the shareholder, which is the executive authority in this case, is the minister. Members felt that that may not be necessarily correct, and therefore we sought legal advice with regards to that. I want to suggest that if members allow us, we dispense first with that, and then we will go to the issue of the next legal opinion, which is one that is based on the risk mitigation independent power producer purchase. We will deal with it then when we are done. I suggest we deal with it when we are done with the first one. And we will also state why we also sought the legal opinion on that and agree. Safe to say, honorable members, we decided that instead of dealing with all these issues when we deal with the program, it will be better that we meet much earlier so that when we deal and adopt the program, we know what is expected of the committee. It could just be factored in on the program. That is why then we decided that no, we can't wait until that time. But also between now and that time, we may also have to make a consideration of the other emergency matters that have just arisen, unfortunately, out of our planning as a committee. So can we give in to the Parliamentary Legal Service to give just first do the presentation with regards or the clarity on the first request with regards to SAF and Nexa.
I hope that I'm audible.
You are audible and visible.
Thanks, Honorable Chair. Good morning, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members, and to the colleagues as well. Chairperson, I want to rehearse the opinion. And for the purposes of saving time, I will cut to the chase. Chairperson, as you may be aware, today's opinion relates to the tabling of annual performance plan of a Section 2 entity. This committee requested to be advised specifically on whether the reason for not tabling the APT is provided for in legislation, particularly in regard to or in relation to Nexa and SAF. Now, Nexa and SAF, in terms of the TFMA, are major public entities that exercise the public power and perform a public function in terms of legislation, and that legislation is the Nuclear Energy Act number 46 of 1999. Now, sir, if you look at the revised framework for strategic and annual performance plans, you will see that it is very silent regarding these entities, which is Schedule 2 entities. And indeed, Chairperson, if you look at Section 52 of the PFMA, you will see that there is a legal obligation on these entities to DMRE, what is referred to as a corporate plan for ministerial approval. Now, Chair, The other area I want to zoom in at is the issue of if you look at what we say in paragraph 11 of the opinion, we say that these entities are intended to generate profit and declare dividends. And I think one of the distinguishing features, if you compare them, for instance, with Schedule 3B and 3D and 3A and 3C, is the fact that they do not receive money through the appropriation bill. So if you look at all these entities, you will see that their level of autonomy lessens or decreases depending on their dependence on the public purse. For instance, the Schedule 2 entities, for instance, are the most autonomous of them all. And we think that there's a reason for that, and the reason being that they do not receive money through the appropriation bill. We also make the point, sir, that even though the scope and ambit of the PFMA read with the National Treasury Instruction Number 10 of 2020-21 regarding the implementation of the revised framework for strategic plan and annual performance plans, does not make mention of Schedule 2 entities submitting strategic plans and APPs to Parliament. We say that this does not negate Parliament from requesting such plans. In other words, sir, there's no debate that these are public entities. And of course, as part of scrutinizing executive action and pursuing its constitutional mandate, I mean, the committee is at liberty to request these documents or similar documents for that matter. Because you must remember, Chair, that the reason why other entities submit these documents to Parliament is around the issue of fostering accountability, transparency, and to improve trust and confidence in government service delivery. So I think the point we're making, Chair, is a question of, yes, there is no specific provision in the PFMA that directs that Schedule 2 entities would table strategic plans and annual performance plans. And we say that in order to have such a dispensation check, we think that the PFMA itself might have to be amended, Chair. But also we're saying that that does not sterilize the institution of Parliament in terms of exercising its constitutional mandate or its oversight functions. And therefore, if the committee, for purposes of transparency and accountability, requires that these documents, it wants to have sight of them, we don't see any impediments in terms of the law why these entities cannot furnish the committee with such documentation. I think, sir, for now, I'll end there, and then we'll take the questions.
Okay, thank you very much, Mr. Tijan. With your presentation, honourable members, without any dilution from my side, any questions of clarity? I'm trying to check. There is a hand from Honourable Lorema. Is there any other hand? Okay, there is a hand from Honorable Malinga. Oh my God, I made a mistake also, but I'm sure I was correct. My staff did not correct me, but I knew that I was correct. I knew that I should have declared that we did form a quorum when we started, but it's fine. I know that we did. So Honorable Lorema, then Honorable Malinga.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
My understanding is that these annual performance plans have in the past always been presented by these entities. So this not supplying them to the portfolio committee is a break with previous practice. It does not seem to me to be sufficient motivation for that break to happen. And as we've heard from this legal opinion, I think I'm right in saying that we are entitled to ask for these documents. So we just heard it from the legal advisors. We are entitled to ask for them. And I think that's absolutely something that we should do in the interests of transparency. There's a lot of money at stake here. Nexa alone costs the government almost 3 billion rand over the medium-term framework, and the CEF much, much more. I think we would be derelict in our duty if we did not ask for these reports. Thanks, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Honorable Malinga.
Thank you, Chairperson. Greetings to yourself, all honorable members on the platform. I really apologize, Chair. If I can open my video, I will be out of this meeting. Traveling to Cape Town before recess is over, it did not seem ideal. But let me greet yourself, members of the Portfolio Committee, our guests, our committee staff, and all guests in the meeting. Chair, let me welcome the presentation as done by the Parliamentary Legal Advisor. And Chair, I saw something in the document when they were running through it now, that if these Schedule 2 companies are receiving monies from the budget of the DMRE of which we are doing oversight, I find it difficult, Chair, that why are they not coming before the Portfolio Committee of Parliament? Because we are doing oversight on DMRE, also its entities. So if maybe I can just get clarity on that, Chair, that Ubona, why do they feel that there should be an exception on their part? How do we do our oversight on some entities and not do some? Because it won't be a packaged deal. Chair, I also want to greet the department as led by the DG. Thank you very much, Chair.
Okay, I see there's a hand of Honorable Mashaule and then Honorable Matova.
Thank you very much, Chair. I think the submission by Honorable Lorima sums it up. You know, there has been a precedence that there would be presentations in the past of this nature, and respecting that as a Schedule 2, they are not obliged by law to be appearing for that specific presentation or submission. The legal opinion does give us rights to, if we think it's in the best interest of the country, to request such information to be presented before the Committee of Parliament. And, you know, when you look at Nexa, which is tasked, amongst other things, with establishing what we will call the state pharmaceutical company, that's a huge project that is really in the best interest of the country, that we understand what they are doing, how far they are, and so forth. SEF is a holding company that has got companies like PetroSA, which we have received presentations about the trouble that PetroSA is under, SFF, our strategic, national strategic stock. There's been a lot of debate about it. So I'm trying to emphasize the point made by Honorable Lorima that the committee feels that the presentation or the submission by SEF and NEXA would be in the best interest of the country, and in that regard would request that such presentations be made with all relevant documentations to the committee. That's my submission, that I'm persuading the committee to make such a submission to the department, that we really would want them to come and present those statements that we looked for and we did not get. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I think from my side as well, the previous members of Parliament have covered what I had wanted to say, but it was more of an emphasis as well of welcoming the legal opinion. In that, at least now as a committee, we have a level of confidence in terms of us requesting the two entities to give those presentations. And it is also very important that we know what is happening in each and every entity that is under the department, regardless of whether they are compelled by law or not. But as people who are supposed to be giving oversight as to what is happening, they should be compelled by the committee to actually give us those presentations. I think Honorable Mahlaule has also elaborated on another point that I had wanted to make in terms of the importance of NEXA as well and the work that's being done there. And I think also with CEF as well, considering the fact that it's one of the entities that are expected to be merging. And as a portfolio, we don't really have a concise presentation in terms of what is happening with those three entities that are expected to merge. So it is very important that we get presentations from the two entities as well. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. I've tried to make it a point that I come through as now through the correct gadget. I think maybe it will help us. Two things, maybe in summary, that you can assist. But I think I just want to put mine as a question. One, I've been trying to check a rule somewhere here on the powers of the committee. I understand that there is a rule that says a committee can invite something, whether an executive authority or any person or any request, any information that it deems or feel that it will assist it in the performance of its duties. Now, I so want us, because we wanted the maybe you clarify this.
Chairperson, are you back?
Yes, I'm coming through now, my small cousin. I don't know what's the problem with this one. Please bear with me, then I'm back on the first one. No, I was just saying that maybe you can help us because the first part might be easy to address. That's what the law says. But on the point of silence, my assumption will be then that rule that allows the committee to request or ask for any information. I don't know which rule is it. If I'm wrong, you will clarify me. It then kicks in. It actually means the rule does not say that information cannot be submitted if so requested in Parliament, which is the point of members I think they were trying to say. May I be that much procedural ridiculous to say it actually means we as a committee at any given moment, rather than the others by procedure that are expected to table. Will I be correct when I say by assumption, at any given moment, whatever information we so need, including the annual financial statements, they can be asked. It does not necessarily mean by virtue of not tabling in Parliament, because I think there's a distinction between tabling and submitting, because tabling to Parliament is a procedure of the National Assembly, of Parliament, National Assembly, but accountability is a different part, which is about requested information to be submitted. The last point, and I want to say this thing with extreme caution, maybe you can help me for now. If you can't, it's okay. The laws are made by us. That's fine. We cannot now complain when we make laws and then we cry. But I'm more interested in this part of not getting funding or getting their budget from the revenue. Does that suggest budget as per the normal or budget as per the point of accountability? The point of accountability is simple, is that some of these entities, let's leave, we may not have them now, but we have seen scary possibilities. Some of these entities, where would they get the revenue in the event they were to ask for help? Because if this section, I'm doing it so, I'm raising it so that tomorrow we may have to look at that. What does budget mean? Because I've seen some of these entities having something where they don't get budget from government, but when they're in trouble, they get something from government. And I can argue strongly that revenue they get from government most definitely is from the budget of the state. So can we get clarity? Is it now become a matter of not being made procedurally to be accountable to the state, but made to appeal to the state when you are in trouble? And is there no distance between the two? But if you can answer, you say you want to leave it to us, I'm amenable to say maybe we may have to look at that, because I don't see budgeting only limited that every annual period, financial year, end of financial year, we give you this much for the next financial year. I look at it that in the event also you are in trouble with your self-generated income, you then go to the public purse and say, please, can you assist me? And that assistance will come from the revenue that we say you are not dependent on. So to what extent do we need, if I were to say that, possibility of a need to strengthen the level of openness and accountability, but also the level of interventions that might be required in the absence of performance? If you can help, I think on that, I might be a little bit comfortable, but if the problem is on our side, you can assist.
Can I give it back to you, legal services?
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I will deal with the first part of your question, and my colleague, Advocate Jenkins, will deal with the second part. Look, Chairperson, we make the point that there is a legitimate governmental purpose in Parliament seeking to have sight of these documents. And we're saying, Chair, if you look at Section 56 of the Constitution, it's very clear there that this committee or this institution is empowered, Chair, to request documents, or even for that matter, to use the stick approach, Chair, in terms of compelling people, I mean, to produce documents, particularly when there's a legitimate governmental expectation to do so. That, Chair, is also echoed in Rule 227 of the NA. And it says that this portfolio committee, Chair, must maintain oversight of any executive organ of state falling within its portfolio. So these entities, Chair, are organs of state in terms of Section 227. I mean, there's no question about that. But also the rule goes on, Chair, in terms of Rule 2271C, to posit that the portfolio committee may monitor, investigate, inquire into, and make recommendations concerning any such executive organ of state. So, Chair, it would be a very unprecedented it will be a dangerous precedent, Chair, for an organ of state, Chair, when information is required by the Committee of Parliament. Because of discharging this constitutional mandate, then you have people refusing to put that information forward. Because you are right, Chair, you say, when you talk about tabling, Chair, that's something else. That's why we say that in terms of the PFMA, there's no legal obligation to table. But it does not necessarily mean, Chair, that sterilizes the committee in terms of its oversight functions. The committee, Chair, requests this information in the interest of accountability, you know, transparency, to improve trust and confidence in government service delivery. That information, Chair, has to be presented. And that's the carrot approach, Chair. Otherwise, there is a stick approach. Thanks, Chair. My colleague will address the second question.
Good day, Chair. Frank Jenkins here. Just start my video. Chairperson, if I understood your question correctly, it's who will assist if they're, I think if I can use the accounting term, if they stop being a going concern. I think, Chair, the answer is that usually, depending on the use or the strategic importance of those companies, that is when we have governments stepping in either one of two ways, either what we have known as a bailout, if we look at South African Airways and so on, and then the second way would be through equity, where government would then change a loan that they give to the entity into equity, which sometimes also costs money. So, Chair, yes, depending on the strategic importance of those entities, it is government that steps in. Be that as it may, Chair, I actually want to make the point in support of my colleague, Mr. Tatjana, that notwithstanding that these entities are meant to be self-supportive, in other words, that they do not need taxpayers' money in an appropriation, they're supposed to generate their own income, they are still public entities. They are performing public functions. So in that light, they are organs of state, and organs of state are accountable, and they must be subjected to the oversight of the National Assembly through the committees. So yes, the strategic plans and I just want to put that to the committee as well. We're not talking about the financial statements. Those will come in the annual report of the department. That is the minister, in terms of the PFMA, will table the financials of these entities. But their strategic plan, the corporate plan, gets approved by the minister, as my colleague has said. So when we are worried, I'm not talking from the perspective of the committee, if the committee is concerned about whether there is in-year trouble within an entity. In other words, we can't wait for the financials. We want to see what is happening. Or, as you say, at this point in time, you want to see the strategic plan. You want to see what this company intends to do with the year going forward. Surely you can request it, and there might be issues around competitiveness or what they call trade information and so forth. But that is something that's sorted out. But you do have the power to get it. And as I say, they're public entities in the end. So whether they get taxpayers' money on an annual basis or they get underwritten by government, meaning that is where their assistance will come if they stop being a going concern. The committee has a duty actually to ensure that there's oversight over those entities, Chairperson. Thank you.
So bear with me. Honorable members, I want us to look at a way forward. The point, that's what I must say to legal services, the issue started on the basis that if I'm not making a mistake, not all the last financial year, when we came in, was it 2019 or we're dealing with it 2020? When we're dealing with the entities, the two entities for the past 2 years had not tabled and submitted their annual financial statements to Parliament. And we were told that the books were not good and hence they had not tabled. When we're dealing with the annual financial statements this year, if I'm not mistaken, which were supposed to be made, we had requested that all entities submit. And I want to speak, the department alerted us in terms of the law that they don't submit annual financial statements to Parliament. They submit their strategic plans to the shareholder, in this case, the minister. And that's how it ends. So the point then that committee wanted, and I want us to then agree on a way forward. The point that the committee wanted the advice on was on that contestation. I think it's settled, the department is correct. Now, I see nothing wrong, though, to still, not based whether the law says or doesn't say so, but the rules of Parliament allows us to ask for any information that is relevant and that can assist the committee in the performance of its oversight task. I want us to deal with that issue. Will we then not be correct to say, despite what the department says, as a committee of Parliament, of which the department, through its executive authority, is accountable to, we request that those annual financial statements be presented to the committee, both of SEF and NEXA, as well as their strategic plans. It is not against that law, nor is it prejudicial to the entities. I don't want us to go even on the past, whether they were submitting or they were not submitting. And I'm not saying there's a new sheriff in the house, but the point is, for accountability purposes, there is nothing that stops us. It is not on the
You are muted, Chair.
But it still remains that they are accountable to the Portfolio Committee of Mineral Resources and Energy on the executive actions and the executive decisions that are being made, including those entities. Shouldn't we put it at that, Honorable Members, and then ask the Department to still come we are not inviting the entity. We are inviting the department with its entity. It can decide to come and present those annual financial statements and the strategic plans. Will that be correct, honorable members? I just need a reaction to that now. Any hands?
Chair, it's supported.
Any second to that, honorable Lorema?
Yes, second, Mr. Chair.
Matter is closed. We will revert back to the department. We will deal with the response of the department based on what we have said, we have agreed as a committee. Okay. Can we now go to the next part of the presentation by legal services? I won't go to other issues except one part. I'm sure me and Honorable Lorema are a bit familiar with it. When we go to the issue on the issue of the risk mitigation independent power producer procurement program, or on the number of issues, especially on matters that relate to potential sub judice related matters. But I must say, honorable members, honorable Lorema will understand this one, because I'm sure we are one of the few people who might have that experience. I don't know, Mr. Chechane, whether it came through to yourselves. I'd requested the staff, because I always avoid to be like I'm leading things, that with my previous experience, if we can be assisted, if you can talk to that, if you can, if it is possible, because I know it does arise. There is a section in the rules of parliament that talks about a subpoena. My previous experience was that is a very tedious process, and by records, I can't recall any successful implementation or action with regards to that. I requested the staff, if you can, to share, because in the process that we might follow, that issue might arise on the issue of the subpoena of witnesses, which is in the rules of parliament, and on how best to handle that. Because based on my previous experience, I've realized that it might be there, but effectively exercising it, it has become one problem. And I said, if possible, if we can get some case study where we think this has been done successfully in the past, it might be good, so that when we deal with the overall, so I'm just putting it up front, if you feel you don't need to deal with it now, or you are not in a position to deal with it, and if it doesn't arise from members, that is also okay with me. Can I then give it to you, Mr. Techan? Wait, you must tell me, is it advocate, ne? I don't like to say Mr. is us.
No, Chair. I'm not an advocate, Chair. I'm an admitted attorney of the High Court.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Titles are very important.
Thanks very much, Chairperson and honorable members. Chair, I'm not sure whether you are saying that given the pointed questions which you asked in the opinion, I think there were five, the committee and its members are satisfied with that. And the only issue which you need to be addressed is the issue of the subpoena. Am I correct in saying that? That's what
No. I'm saying make your own total presentation. It's okay. But I was saying there is a potential that in the process of what you might suggest, it could lead to situations where you might require to deal with the powers of the committee with regards to the subpoena processes. Not that I was saying that one, if you don't have anything to say about it, leave it. It will remain a responsibility of members of this committee, including the chairperson himself. So it's a by the way thing, not part of your present. But I'd request the staff that if possible, you can assist so that we don't come back to you
and ask for other legal opinion now when we deal with the process, if we can get all those things in one basket. That was the context I was raising. But if it is not an issue, leave it, because for now it has not arisen. But I think it might help if it was going to be contained to say, if you opt for this, but so you need witnesses in terms of the authority of the committee, it also has got the authority to subpoena. But I was saying, I've realized that that process is quite complex, and I've not seen it successfully implemented. That is the context I was raising. Not that I was saying members have read it, but they have not heard it. So the legal opinion still stands that it must be the one presented.
Okay. Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members. I've got a lot of documents here in front of me because we've been asked to present two opinions in one session. So I don't want to be talking about another one when I'm referring to another one. Well, okay, Chair. Regarding this matter, Chair, you will recall that you asked us pointed questions. I think it was five of them. Regarding to the risk mitigation independent power producer procurement program. And you received that even though in your brief, one of the issues you were raising was that the tender process, the department is still seized with the tender process. We then said that though, if you look at the facts, Chair, it seems as if the horse has already bolted. In other words, that process has been completed, and we find ourselves now where there is litigation, primarily because one of the unsuccessful bidders was not happy with how the process was handled. Chair, I will start with the first question that you asked us. The first question you asked legal, Chair, was, does the committee have the authority to investigate any procurement process undertaken by the department before the department is concluded? And I think, Chair, partly I've responded to that to say that the procurement process itself on the facts has been concluded, and it is only the implementation of that particular decision that is being contested now in the court. Now, it bears pointing out upfront, Chair, that in the course of answering this question, on the facts which have been provided, the procurement process conducted by the department has in fact been concluded. In regard to the procurement process, the department is functus officio, which is a legal principle, which means that once an adjudicator renders a decision regarding an issue, it lacks any power to re-examine that decision. So that's the first question that you asked us, Chair. And one of the points that we made, Chair, we said that there's no rule or law, Chair, that says that Parliament may not inquire into and report on a matter, merely because it also happens to be before the courts. We say, Chair, that Parliament and the judiciary perform different functions and may do so in parallel in relation to the same matter. Parliament and the judiciary are institutions of equal standing, neither trumps the other. Therefore, the fact that a matter is pending before the other does not sterilize the other. So that's how Chair, we dealt with the first question. And we also said that the committee is consequently not in any way restricted if it wishes to undertake an investigation into the MRIPPP, even if that overlaps with the issues before the court. Now, your second question, Chair, was at which stage is the investigation of the above-mentioned procurement process justifiable? And I think, Chair, our answer was that because of the fact that our response to question one was in the affirmative, that question two does not arise. And I think the third question, Chair, was, can the committee lawfully investigate any matter concerning the department where court action on the same matter is pending? And you say that we've already dealt with this above. The committee is not precluded in any way from the performance of its functions, merely because its investigation overlaps with a matter before the courts. Now, the other question, sir, which you asked us was the issue of under what circumstances is the committee justified to refer a matter to another committee of parliament or work in concurrence with another committee. And so we referred you to Rule 169 of the NA Rules, where it says that a committee may confer with any committee of the Assembly when the circumstances under which a committee may confer with another are not specified. It follows that such conferral can only be justified if its purpose is to further the respective mandates of the committee's concerns. If in the course of the committee performing its functions and exercising its powers, an issue emerges that invokes or falls properly within the mandate of another committee, the NA rules permit for two or more committees to confer, for such meetings to be co-chaired by the chairs of the conferring committees, and for decisions to be taken by the conferring committees which their conferral relates. Your last question, Chair, was the committee's approach on a matter that cuts across other relevant committees of Parliament, in this case, the Portfolio Committee on Public Enterprise, the Portfolio Committee of Environment, Forests and Fisheries, the Standing Committee on Auditor General, the Standing Committee on Finance and Scope, and we say, Chair, that has already been taken care of by Rule 160. By the NA Rule 169.1. Now, Chair, regarding the issue of the subpoena, the approach, Chair, usually is that a request is sent to someone to appear before the committee, and of course, there are negotiations regarding time and dates. And the issue of the summons, Chair, usually is a last resort, where you have someone who adopts an uncooperative spirit, or what we refer to as a recalcitrant witness. The committee is then compelled, Chair, even in terms of Section 56 of the Constitution, to issue summons. But, Chair, that summons can only be issued with the concurrence of the Speaker. And I think, Chair, if you look at Section 14(2)(b) of the PIPRA, which is the Powers and Privileges of Provincial Legislatures and Parliament Act, you will see that it says that the summons in terms of Section 1 of the in terms of Section 56 and 69 of the Constitution to appear before a House or committee to give evidence or to produce documents must be issued by the Secretary on the instructions of B, the Chairperson, which is you, Chair of the Committee Consent, acting in accordance with the resolution of the Committee and with the concurrence of the Speaker in the case of the National Assembly or Chairperson in the case of the National Council of Provinces. And of course, Chair, if you go to Section 17 of the same Act, you will see that there are offences there for someone who does not observe or comply with the summons. I'm not sure, Chair, if that covers you, but of course, we're here, Chair, we'll deal with your questions. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, thank you very much, Mr. Techana, please. Honourable members, I was just laying those things so that we can have a broader overview of what we are supposed to be dealing with. I'm now waiting for your hands for clarity questions. There's a hand of Honourable Rema. Okay, there's only one hand for now. Honourable Lauren.
Thanks, Mr. Chair.
I think this legal opinion makes it quite clear that we as a committee can investigate this matter if we choose. We can set up an investigation. I would suggest that given the gravity of the accusations that have been made about this process, that we do institute an investigation. Now, it may be argued that it may have become a dead letter in that the contentious part of this program, the car powerships part, has been refused environmental authorization. However, there is at least one report that the financial closure deadline has been extended, in which case the possibility arises that the car powerships a deal may get another chance to conclude an environmental authorization in the new deadline. If indeed that is the case, we don't know. Even if that is the case, that it is a dead letter, that car powerships deal is now no longer on the table, such is the gravity of the accusations of, first of all, bad construction of the tender, in that we end up with a temporary solution being allocated over a period of 20 years, but also the very disturbing accusations that there may have been some kind of corruption in the tender allocation. I think we should still go ahead and investigate, but it would be very helpful to get from the department an indication as to whether or not this car partnerships deal is now completely off the table, or whether there's a possibility of extended deadlines and this now may be a current issue again. Thanks, Mr. Chair.
Okay, thank you, Honorable Larim. I can see, Honorable Members, I've been looking for your hands here. There is none. Can we do it like this, Honorable Members? You know why, Honorable Ndavima, I was raising this thing? Not that I'm trying to disadvantage other members. It's an experience. We were once given this task, I think, in the Fifth Parliament, with so much broad ways or things to do, and which becomes very difficult. I tried myself to see how to streamline the process. If members allow me, can I make a suggestion very quickly? Maybe it will help us if we discuss that, so that when we deal with the report. Thank you, Legal Service, but I would appreciate that maybe you don't leave, so that you'll understand the context of why I was also saying, please try and assist with this process. If members allow me, can I go ahead?
Yes, Chair.
Okay. Can we do it like this, Honorable Members? The procedure normal and the legal services can help us to abuse your presence. Can we suggest that we invite the minister? Now, maybe first let's agree that we constitute, I prefer, whether this wording is wrong, we can find it. Can we first agree that we will constitute or start a process of a committee investigation inquiry? Invite the minister to come and make a presentation on the whole process of the risk mitigation. The minister, and I think I'm making this point specific, Honorable Member, not the department, the minister as the accounting authority, to come and make a presentation on the risk mitigation independent power producer purchase. We know the department did respond specifically on the need, basis, and requirement for such a project. the advantages of such a project. I don't want to limit Honorable Lorena so that we are not accused of being biased. I don't want to reduce this to car worship. Obviously, it's going to lead us there. But from where we sit as a committee, we must be seen exercising some degree of objectivity. And also, give us the extent to which that process is at now going forward, and why the options. That will include the details of that process, including the established authority structures, include names, who was doing this, who was working on this. I think that's because I'm sure if we start an inquiry or an investigation, the executive authority should be the first one that is given a responsibility. Based on that, the last point would be his understanding, knowledge. I'm saying his, I know, and the normal circumstances would say the understanding. His understanding, knowledge, and reaction on the allegations that are even in front of the courts with regards to alleged acts or possible acts of malfeasance, including some that might be bordering on acts of corruption or attempted corruption or influence, undue influence on the process. Maybe that will be good. And agree that based on that, the committee with regards to the project itself would at that point, having received those presentations, make a determination on the course of action. But in the meantime, the committee line up a process of dealing with the allegations of unfair or undue influence on the procedure. These include, amongst others, the allegations about companies being forced to make particular concessions in order for them to be considered in the procurement process. I want to be upfront and straightforward and say we then start the process of a committee inquiry investigation, invite, I hope, what is that company that is in court? Is in, what is it? DMG. Invite that company to come and present to the committee its experience. I don't want to say experience or concerned about the process which would have led to him to make to take such steps. Secondly, I know we cannot hide it. There are names, all the names of that are mentioned in the allegations. It involves the two officials from the department. Will bear with me, DG. There is the name of the DG, the Director General, and the name of the Deputy Director General. There is names of the directors. There are names of private individuals that were present in the meeting. And based on that, they must be given a fair chance to give also their side of the story. We may have other people that might be considered also subject to the process as we go forward. Lastly, the point I was raising then with regards, our experience was that legal services, at times, I can give you an apology in the Committee on Mineral Resources. You know, when the then minister was invited, we're given. That's why I said I was saying welcome to Advocate Jenkins. He knows this experience. You couldn't say when a person says I'm sick. It was impossible to say no. You are not being honest. To an extent, as a committee, then we had to agree that we will continue because we had given the executive authority a right and an opportunity to present. Now we needed to move on. Leave then the other technicalities that kicked in, even by disagreement within the committee. So for me, I think we must hit the ground running, dispose some of the things that we can deal with them. If we remain with other areas, I doubt that we can disagree on what now we are guided on. That the fact that other matters are in front of the court does not necessarily mean that we cannot deal with them. So we deal with, dispense with some of those straightforward issues. We then deal with the question whether there are people who are willing participants or who are not, which is why I was raising the point. I'm raising the point because without prejudice, I think I've got about two cases of people whom a committee had tried. The Committee of Public Enterprise at some point tried to subpoena a private member. The private member never appeared. I think it's twice when these things have happened. That's why I was saying, if we can get one of the success stories on a parliamentary subpoena process, when I looked at rule, it's too broad that you can follow and do a successful subpoena in a person. But I don't know. It will arise at that point. The last thing, honourable members, is whether we make a request either in a hybrid way or in a specific way. In this case, for an example, you'll get a situation where I can just say my network is bad and I disappear. Whether we make a request at an administrative level that will identify a place where we could, especially when we deal with the allegations of undue influence, and request those people to make physical presence and presentations on the committee's task. It means we may have to request so that we identify a venue, and as a committee, we also become physically present so that we can deal with technical challenges. That is the issue I wanted to place in front of the committee. Maybe we can also take a consideration on what could constitute the specific terms of reference. I'm making this submission. Maybe it will assist members so that when we meet, we can then outline the process in terms of the program going forward. That is what I wanted to propose, honorable members. I'm now expecting whether that is agreeable or members want to make additions or they want to tackle certain opposition or deductions on what is being subjected. Honorable Lorim, I see your hand. Is there any other one? Honorable Kola, is there any other hand? Honorable Matogwe? Okay, Honorable Lorima.
Mr. Chair, I really welcome the direction this is going in, and I agree that the logical place to start with this is with the Minister giving us a presentation. The okay. Next step... Sorry?
Okay. Yes, okay.
The next step seems to me to be a very complex one. Is it your idea that we you know, there's a lot to do in terms of deciding who should be coming to talk to the committee? Is it your intention to appoint an evidence leader, as has been done with other investigations in the past? I know that seems to me to be the logical thing to do. I don't know what the constraints are on that. And then I'd also just like to agree with you that a physical meeting is really going to be important in this case for all the reasons that you've outlined. I do think that as we appear to be in certainly this part of the country coming out of a wave of COVID, that several weeks from now the situation will be much better, also given the fact that many of us will be vaccinated by that time. So I agree that that's the right way to go. But on this question of the evidence leader and who's going to compile first of all, the terms of reference, but also the list of people who should be coming to talk to us. Could you enlighten us more on that?
Okay. Fine. Honorable Kula?
No, thanks, Chairman. My firm belief is that I don't think we're at a point yet as a committee where we have to be appointing an evidence leader on this matter. I think we are quite correct that the first thing we must do is that we must call the executive authority so that it must clarify all the issues that are there around this particular program, not only the Kapuaship part, but the entire risk mitigation program, so that we get clarity from the executive that where did the program start, what are the things that they've done to deal with all the allegations that are out there in the open. The second part, Chair, which I agree with, we do also on, is that we then need to call all the affected parties so that we are also able to hear their views. Once we have done all of that thing, establish the view of the executive authority, establish the view of all the affected parties, we can then arrive at the determination, saying, what is the next course of action that the committee must take? Because one of the things we must do for us to be able to move forward and be able to play our oversight role as a committee, we must be able to establish the truth from facts. And I think this process that we have outlined, which some of us want to say that we second it, will be able to assist and empower the committee to be able to decide not only on a future course of action, but many of the courses of action we must take to ensure that this program will close the matter to the satisfaction of everybody concerned. Lastly, Chair, I agree with you that it would be near impossible or difficult if we would want to undertake such a process virtually. We would need to be able to hold a physical meeting where all the affected parties are there, the executive are there, including the committee, so that we are then able to deal with all the issues. I think a process will then be followed to ensure that how do we at this point in time deal with the issue of us meeting physical. But I'm tempted to agree with each other because this matter is a very sensitive matter. I don't think we'd be doing justice to deal with the matter at a virtual level. It would need for us to try by all means possible that we sit virtually and address all the concerns that are there to the satisfaction of all parties. But I would want to persuade Honorable Lorima that I don't think we're at that time yet as a committee where we have to be appointing an evidence lead. Let's play the role we must play as a committee. At a future time, we can then say that in our next course of action, we can then appoint an evidence leader when there's a need to deal with issues around when we've established a committee inquiry. Thanks, Chairperson. But in short, I agree with you with the proposals that we have raised. Thanks.
Okay. Honorable Matoge.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I think from my side, what I wanted to say first, to just first welcome your direction and your inputs, and to also say that now that we have the report from, or the legal opinion rather, I don't think there is a reason for us to not constitute the committee or to not launch the investigation. For our discussions the last time, if memory serves me correct, was that we needed to first check we needed to check that we could actually institute the investigation. But what I would rather suggest as well is that we must be given an opportunity to sort of apply our minds first to what you are suggesting in terms of who must be investigated, who must be invited, so that we are able to sort of process what should be the way forward, and also how must the committee be constituted, and what would be the terms of reference, considering everything all the arguments that have been made by the honourable members, including yourselves, I think that we will not be able to conclude everything in today's meeting. It is better rather to actually, as a committee, to conclude or to rather decide that we will initiate the investigation. And perhaps we then schedule a meeting where we must now discuss in terms of what would be the way forward, who would constitute the committee, and what would be the terms of reference. Thank you very much.
Honourable Mashaula.
Thanks, Chairperson. I think we ought to be open-minded when it comes to this process. And the question asked by Honourable Lorima is an important question that should be responded to, whether we are using an evidence leader or any other method. And I think that should not be the only suggested method. I think we should throw it back to the chair and the team to carefully consider whether evidence leader in this respect would be the better system that we use. But in my view, it may limit participation from members of the committee. Or we say, Chair, do we say the chair takes a leading role in the process and empower him with some external kind of forensic capacity that will assist the committee itself, but we have the chair of the committee leading the process so that it ensures participation to the members of the committee. To even ask questions that may be relevant. But that, of course, will come when we have solidified the terms of reference and agreed that this is what we seek to achieve. So is it evidence leader? And then we just watch as things unfold? Or is it the chair taking a leading role on behalf of the committee where external support of forensic and other support may be afforded to the chair and allow members of the portfolio committee to participate without being hindered by what the evidence leader may deem these are the questions to be asked and not other questions to be asked. Thank you very much.
Okay, let me, before I... Okay. Honourable members, let me deal with the first issue first. If we listen to the legal opinion says, as a committee, we have a duty and a responsibility to perform our executive, our responsibility. We must exercise our responsibility of accountability. And therefore, it's thrown to this committee. My reason I was saying, let's deal with the issues, and I think I might be tempted to agree with Honorable Kola, is that if we talk about an evidence leader, we must know that the evidence leader is subject to, being provided to, by Parliament. And I will come back to this issue. In fact, I should have raised it and say congratulations to other members of this committee, which could be another problem. Myself, Honorable Mashaule, Honorable Mile, serve in the committee one section 194. It means this committee has got three members in section 194. I assume it's a potential I've not seen. I will have to check that Honorable Zungula might also be serving in that committee. It means four members of the committee are serving on section 194 committee. Part of the thing that emerged on section 194
is that the question of the evidence leader is going to be problematic, and the committee has to perform its duties. As and when it feels it needs some extra complementary exercise, it will deal with that matter at that point. Now, the reason I was saying from a committee point of view, nothing stops the committee to invite. What we can do is that, like members are saying, is to come in the next meeting, say, subsequent to the presentation by the minister, there are things that are there glaring in the public domain. We cannot say we don't know. We have to bring certainty to them and say, here are the list of the people that we think can help and assist the committee to provide clarity on the allegations that are made, either by or against them. And maybe based on that information that would have been collected by the committee, the committee will be able now to go back and say, based on what was received, presented by these people, either in denial or saying, yes, it happened and this and that. And the point that I think Honorable Mashalo was also raising, that this one will require some degree of expertise that we as a committee will be unable to supply, or we don't have skills or required knowledge of. We may then have to say, please assist us with these specific skills because we want to conduct this type of an investigation, which is separate from. Now, the point is, at this stage, we don't have anything. We still have got allegations. So my take is that the committee cannot say all the allegations we need a evidence leader. It can say on the submissions and the preliminary work that we have done, it is clear that now we will need somebody who can lead evidence because of 1, 2, and 3. For now, we have to deal with the allegations. That is the point I was raising. I'm not running away, but let me also hasten to say, with my experience, it can take us up until, and I'm not going to be rigid, it can take us up until next year, just trying to find. I respect parliamentary legal services, but I will not be surprised that by the time we ask for an evidence leader, we may not even get one, because you are not expecting them. Even when you start the process, that person will be there. Or if that person is there, by the time you go on the third month, you would have got another second or third person doing that work. So I'm appealing to members that to do justice, let's take responsibility for our own exercise. And based on the facts that will prevail on the investigation that we have conducted, we can then say this matter is deeper than it meets the eye. It therefore requires 1, 2, and 3. So if members agree, we will come and present what we think should be the areas or terms of reference, and we will try and forward them in advance, Honorable Madokwe. We will then be able to come forth and say, we think this following might require to come and explain their role or their knowledge or understanding on what had transpired in terms of the undue influence on the process. If then beyond that process that we have undertaken, there is more that needs to be done, including the consideration of particular exercise, including the evidence leader, I can also say in the meantime, we can, maybe by the time we meet, it doesn't mean we'll wait, we can, Honorable Lorema, raise the matter that the committee felt that there must be a consideration of an evidence leader in the process. But if the parliament cannot, by the time we arrive there, give us an answer, it doesn't stop us to continue with the work of the committee as far as this matter is concerned. Now, I think if we agree on that, we will then forward the names. We work on the terms of reference, forward the names, agree on the program. What is going to be technical, I must say now, Honorable Members, is that
If already have got four, including the chair of the committee, serving one another committee, which is, I must say, I'm saying it in inverted commas, probably highly prioritized because it's a committee constituted by Parliament. It's not, it's an ad hoc committee. It means we have to also accommodate that program of Section 194 rather than to have four members automatically absent or having to make a choice between the work of the committee and the work of that ad hoc committee of Parliament. So we will try also, as we make these proposals, bring in the dates that may not be in conflict with the date of the Section 194 committee. So we will bring also to say we expect the minister on this day to come and make what I would say a holistic presentation. We'll then bring in dates where we think that we can sit and start the preliminary inquiry investigation on the allegations on undue influence. Subject to the outcome of that process, we'll make other consideration, including what we will be presenting as a program for that work will be the proposed terms of reference. Subsequently to that, honorable members, so parallel to that process, we will also make notes of the request for Parliament to make a reconsideration to assist the committee with an evidence letter. All those things, we'll deal with them when we arrive at the next committee meeting that will now be dealing with the finalization of the program. Is that agreed, honorable members?
Agreed, sir.
Yes,
any second, sir? Any second, sir?
Chair, I do second in agreement, Chair.
Okay. If that is the case, honorable members, we will then circulate, including the proposed program for adoption. I don't know whether members, there seems to be confirmation that the visit to the late honorable Nxumalo will be on Thursday. So we need to quickly submit to those names that we suggest. I'm available. ANC, is there anyone available from you?
Yes, Chair.
Okay. DA?
Mr. Chair, unfortunately, I'm not available. I don't know about my colleague. I think he might be attending to something else at the moment, so he can't give us an answer. Can we let you know?
Please, can you revert back to Ayanda or Areko before 4 o'clock? Before 4 o'clock today.
Sorry, Chair, I've got the response already from Mr. Mailem.
Yeah.
I'm busy with all the logistics. Actually, for all the members, it's fine.
Oh, she's confirming.
No, she's not available. Mama Toko is available.
Okay, Honorable Matobe.
Mr. Zungule is not available.
Okay.
I'm waiting for Ms. Malinga to confirm now.
And then you have not checked with Professor Nsima?
I can't get hold of him yet. I'm busy with him on the phone.
Okay. Let's just confirm, Honorable Members, that on behalf of the committee now, it's going to be the chairperson, Honorable Luzipo, and then Honorable Mashaule, and then Honorable Matobe, for now. And then I understand those ones are confirmed in the meeting. Honorable members, in the absence of any other matter, thank you very much.
Sorry, Chair, there's a hand for Advocate Jenkins.
Oh. Advocate, my problem is that I'm multitasking.
It's okay, Chairperson. I don't want to take you back, but your question on any success stories concerning the subpoenas, there has been a few success stories. There's various examples where some of the witnesses, I know in the Finance Committee, prefer to being subpoenaed. The reason being that when we when we subpoena someone to appear, we have to set out the ambit of the investigation. You set out what documents you want, what information you want. So witness is in a way protected. They know what to expect. But of course, there's always like additional or extra questions. So, but some people prefer to be subpoenaed. There's been other examples also of subpoenaing people who were not keen to come to the committee. So there are ample examples of success stories. The challenge is, in addition to that, you have to set on the subpoena what the ambit or the scope of the investigation is. Because sometimes, as you just said, sometimes you want to ask questions and find out what the scope will be. But the there's more of an administrative issue. As my colleague, Mr. Tatjana, said, it must be countersigned or in consultation with the speaker. So that's another day or two, and it depends on other people's availability to accede to some of these administrative tasks. I'm not saying the speaker's office is slow. I'm just saying there's a whole process. It's first the resolution of the committee. Then the chairperson sends that through, usually through Mr. Froelich's office, chair of houses, to get to the speaker for approval there. Then we draft it and we send it out, and the sheriff will deliver it and bring it back. But there are success stories, and if there's appetite for a chair and someone doesn't want to appear, we simply wait for when that subpoena and we get the it has happened before, chair. Thank you. Sorry to take you back, chair.
No, you are helping. You are helping us. You are not taking us back. You are helping us. We will look at that. But there is something called antagonistic witnesses, which are those ones that are positive, voluntary witnesses, which just need to be requested through a subpoena. It's a different kettle of fish. But it's okay. I'm sure you know when I make the example about public enterprise previous inquiry, where in my view, and you know our experience on the previous one on the fifth parliament. But being the case as it may, we will deal with those issues as and when we deal with the program going forward. Honourable members, I think we have dealt with most of the issues. Thank you very much for your cooperation. Like I said before, we might have other emergency interventions, including what we have not finalized, especially the recent unrest that have taken place, both Gauteng and KZN, and members must be always on the alert. We might need to visit the two provinces. We'll be working on the logistics, including the presentation from the department. What are the challenges, or to what extent has that impacted on the sector or industry where we are in, the events of KZN and Gauteng? On that note, in the absence of any other matter, can I declare the meeting adjourned until such time notice is given of the next meeting? I hope I didn't leave anything outside the agenda of today. Can I declare the meeting adjourned? Thank you very much, honorable members, our guests. Legal services, thank you very much. I think you have assisted us to finalize the meeting probably on time. On that note, the meeting stands adjourned. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chairperson.